Welcome to Creative Conversations. My name is Hala Citron, and we are so happy that you have chosen to spend this hour with us. I am owner and founder of I Am Creative and Express Yourself Publishing, and I am on a mission to expand the definition of creativity beyond a pencil and a paintbrush and empower people, especially adults, to own their talents and voice that come in so many different forms. So I created this space to talk with people with all different jobs, hobbies, and interests, and have conversations about experiences and perspectives all centered around three questions. One, how do you define creativity? Two, how do you incorporate it into your life? And three, why do you think that it's important? Then we have a free-flowing conversation and we see where it goes. So I have had the opportunity to talk with musicians, Reiki masters, mediums, doctor, lawyer, real estate agents, entrepreneurs as young as 13, and so many more. And these conversations explore the reality that creativity is not cute. It is necessary. People have defined creativity as their soul's essence, courage, imagination, basically all that we are and want to be. Sharing these stories expands one's thinking and opens up self-expression to feel more empowered, connected, and dare I say, happy. So my inspiring guest today is Kelly Schwartz Kevel. Kelly is a coach and mentor to single moms and creative professionals that has been full and diverse. It has included work with the University of Maryland, Center for Young Children, Johns Hopkins University School of Education, Urban Teachers Teaching Strategies, at Baltimore Sexual Assault Domestic Violence Center. So much to be said in all of this. It's going to be a great conversation. So Kelly, welcome to the space. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me okay?
I can. Welcome.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so glad you are here. So your bio, I just took like a tiny portion of it. And can you please expand and tell us more about your journey?
Sure, it would be my pleasure. So I am currently working in the online space. So this is a relatively new endeavor for me. In the last year, I dove into the online world as so many others did during COVID and, you know, the pandemic, and was just so happy that I made that choice because it opened my world exponentially. And I was able to connect and work and serve so many more women than I ever could in my little tiny corner of the world. But when I really started this journey last year, what my goal has been and was then and still is, was to bring my real world experience to my online work. And now we're kind of at this place where now I want to take my online work back into the real world. Mm-hmm. So we go back into, I guess I'm saying real world with quotes around my words here. But as you read a little bit, I started out my professional career working in Baltimore's Rape Crisis Center. And it was although it was really tough work and hard work, it was really a beautiful experience and a beautiful way for me to begin serving women and children in my community. And most of what I did was on the education and risk reduction side of things. And I did that for many years, and it really took me into all parts of my community, all over the Baltimore, D.C. metropolitan area. And after doing that for about 5 years, I did get a little burnt out. It was tough work. And I decided to go back into like a school setting. And I spent many years working with young children, parents, and teachers in the early education environment, in the early ed setting. And as of late, I would say in the last 10 years or so, I've really focused on family advocacy, working with women and children, and teacher training, Like those kind of have been my main focuses as of late. I also have a family of four. So I have children ranging in age from 20 down to 7. And that's been a huge part of my journey, of course, and has really influenced all of my work and my motivation, of course, to do the work. And then my most recent endeavor is I've jumped into a multi-author book collaboration called Aligned Leaders, and I'm very excited about that. And I'll be writing a chapter, just sharing my story and my journey. And then I guess just again to bring us back to present, one of the things that I'm bringing to my work online is really focusing in on women, specifically single mothers, who really are looking for a soft place to land, looking for support and comfort, but then also resources and guidance and mentorship. Because I went through my own separation and divorce about 8 years ago, and it was quite a journey. It has been quite a journey. And I want to really serve other women who are going through it, because it is a transformation that I think requires support and community and creativity.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Whew, okay. Lots going on, but
so much.
So much. But you know what? There's this common thread as I listen to you that really is so much about serving, which you said multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
You can really feel that that consistency in your message.
Yes.
All the way through. So yeah, so this, I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yes.
Okay. So Kelly, let's start off with your would you rather.
Okay.
So would you rather be super strong or super fast?
Ooh. Super strong or super fast. I think I would rather be super fast.
Any reason in particular?
I just think I'm already pretty fast.
Oh, okay.
I feel like it would be a shorter road.
I love it. You're fast on foot, or you're fast in a car, or you're fast thinking?
I'm fast all the way around. Definitely on foot.
Well, are you one of those people that when you're walking in the city that you're like 3 blocks ahead of everybody?
Yes. And I have to just chill out. And very funny story about being fast real quick. I had a shirt that said, it's okay to be fast. It was like Nike put it out. And I just thought it was so funny. I wore it. My son was learning to read. And he's like, Mom, why does that say you're okay to be fat? I was like, that is not the message I want to send right now. Although, you know.
Good. Although, you know what?
I was going to say, although, you know, it isn't the worst thing that could happen to me, but I was going for the fast.
Oh, kids. You're like, thanks, sweetie.
Right. Exactly. Appreciate that.
Oh, my God. It's my husband. When we are walking, especially in New York, mm-hmm. that man, because he's just a really fast walker, he'll be blocks ahead of us. And I look at the kids. I'm like, where is he going? Like, we're walking as a family together. Like, he's going to have to wait eventually.
Exactly. It's no fun. I use mine. I try really hard to, when I'm with family and we're doing fun things, I try really hard to like I have to close my eyes sometimes and like count and go, okay, slow your roll. But it's especially useful if I have to run into the grocery store. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I'm in, I'm out. No problem.
Like the Flash.
Exactly.
I love it. Okay. So here we go. So we're going to dive on in.
Okay.
So, So how do you define creativity?
I love this question. And when you first threw it out, I thought, you know what? The first thing that pops into my mind is color and light. I don't know why. Well, I kind of know why, but those are the first things: color, light, and individuality. And I think that really is what creativity is about for me. You know, the individuality is really important, but I also definitely connect creativity to kind of the fullness of life. So all the colors and all the light and all the things.
Ooh, so it's like the spectrum.
Yes, definitely.
Ooh, can you dive into that anymore? Because that's just beautiful. Color, light, individuality. That's what creativity means.
Yes. I think because for me as a kid, and I'm sure your conversations probably often go to this because children are so, it's so easy for children to tap into their creativity, you know, until they go through, you know, traditional education and it's kind of beat out of them, so to speak. I think when I hark back to a time in my life when I really was very present in my life, it was as a child, and it was when I was just full of everything that was happening. So, you know, being outside and just, you know, being in nature, or just putting my face down on, you know, the sidewalk outside when it's warm and watching the ants and looking up at the sky, you know, it's the being present and really receiving everything that's around you. You know, my kids often will say to me, "Mom, we saw the sky." I'm always like, "Look at the sky.
Oh my gosh, are we the same person?" Yes.
and they're always like, "Oh yeah, we saw it yesterday."
You're like, "Wait a minute, you're not supposed to be the one saying that."
Right, exactly. It's so sad. It's heartbreaking. I do have one child that loves taking pictures of the sky and flowers, and just, you know, he's my artist for sure, artist with a capital A. And he definitely doesn't have a problem with that. But it's interesting. He has said that people have especially when he was in like high school, his friends would comment like, "Why do you keep posting pictures of flowers?" Like, you know, like not appreciating the color and light. Mm. Yeah.
I really like that. I haven't heard that one yet, that answer specifically. Mm. And not in those terms. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. as you were saying, like being very present in childhood, I just got an image, which I saw on the news the other day. Mm-hmm. On some mountain where there'd be skiing, they actually have a slip and slide that's like a mile and a half long.
Oh my gosh, that is so amazing. I have a real aversion to slip and slides. I attempted one a few years back, forgetting that I was over 40 at the time.
Uh-oh, what happened?
I mean, I got the bright idea that it was going to be more comfortable to go, like, to run and fall backward, like on my bottom and then my back and then my head. Luckily, I bounced back, but that was one of my first messages, like, "Hey, maybe that's not how you're going to do the slip and slide these days." We're going to try something else. But I do feel like, you know, those are the things, you know, that's a little thing, a slip and slide on the top of a ski mountain. That's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, I just thought as we were sharing and talking just now, it made me think, I was teaching years ago, and there was a little girl in my class. I can just say her first name. It was Syringa, which is a flower, and she is an amazing human being. But she was demanding my attention outside, and I'm managing like all these other children. And finally, I turn and I say, "Okay, Syringa, I'm ready. What do you need?" And she grabs my hand and she runs to the top of the hill and she lays flat in the grass. And she's like nose to nose with this blade of grass. And she says, "Isn't it beautiful?"
Oh my God.
And there's a little tiny dewdrop on this blade of grass. And that was one of those moments. I was like, thank you, God, that I stopped and turned to her and followed her, because when's the last time I've marveled at a dewdrop on a blade of grass? I mean, it was just such a beautiful, beautiful moment.
Oh my gosh. That's just like, I see, as you say that, mm-hmm. I see the color, I see the light, I see the excitement. And it's like those microscopic views that we have.
Yes.
Where I love that when someone was actually showing their work, mm-hmm. where recently, actually one of my contributors in my book was showing how she was doing these zoomed in versions, which had so, she's like, people respond to the zoomed in more than they do than the whole piece itself.
Right.
But there is something to be said about those microscopic moments, those zoom ins, because everything is kind of enlarged. Everything is more vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely, it's just bigger.
Yes. And it was, I mean, and again, young children are so beautifully adept at doing that, you know, and being in those moments.
Yeah, it's as adults. Yeah, we need to be in those moments, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right. That's really what being present truly is noticing all of that.
And it's, you know, I feel like we, in general, it's talked about so much, like, you know, be in the moment. And it's really challenging for most adults. And, you know, the flow of our lives and always looking forward and what's next and, you know, striving. And meanwhile, life is happening and we're missing the good stuff.
Yeah, life is in session.
Life's in session, exactly. And I'll tell you too, I was really motivated to jump in to this coaching and mentoring work last year. I lost someone super close to me, my aunt, who was much like a mother, big sister, auntie, grandmother. She was all those things. And she passed very suddenly. And she was this rock star kind of color and light individual. She was 86 and drove a yellow Mustang. She just,
oh, wow.
She never married, you know, she lived her life. And I think she had many, many dreams that were never actualized, but in general, she lived in color. And, you know, with her passing, I was like, I thought she would live forever. She didn't, and neither will I. And it really motivated me to move forward with more of the kind of work that I want to do, serving others and helping women to really expand and use creativity to do that. Because, you know, for example, going from being in a two-person family and raising children to doing it on your own takes a fair amount of creativity.
Yeah. Talk about that a little bit more. As you're using that word creativity in that, how would you define that in what you just said?
Well, I think really the first thing that comes to my mind is shedding a lot of our limiting beliefs. And I started this group about 6 months ago, really. And I just only realized in the last couple months that I was still holding on to quite a few limiting beliefs about being a single mom. And I've been doing it now 8 years. And I think it's really powerful and useful for women as well as for their children, their whole family, for them to really identify what's holding them back. And more than likely, it's a limiting belief that is blocking their creativity. You know, so for example, one of the things for me was I didn't realize consciously how much I believed that being a single mother meant you had to struggle in all ways, right? You had to struggle financially and you had to struggle like doing it all and, you know, finding ways to continue to live your life versus, you know, serving your children. And it was like such a beautiful light bulb moment.
Yeah.
And you just continue to have them throughout your life. I know, where I was like, oh, wait a second. I'm really buying into this belief that I didn't even realize I was holding. And so, you know, jumping outside of those boxes and a lot of that can be facilitated by seeing other women sharing their creativity, sharing their lives, sharing the messy middle. You know, how did you make it work? You didn't make it work. You know, mom number one may not make it work the same way mom number two does, right? Like we just have to look at what our resources are internally as well as externally. And then what picture do we want to paint for us and our children? Right? I mean, I spent a lot of time I left a marriage that I wasn't feeling really was fulfilling for me and in turn for my children, you know, seeing that example. And then I kind of stayed in the environment for a while because I didn't really know where I fit. And that was super painful because, you know, it wasn't where I wanted to be and it wasn't really where I fit anymore. So I had to get creative. And even when I was being creative, my point about this limiting belief was about struggle, was that I realized I still have limiting beliefs that I have to unearth and accept and recognize and then kind of let go and replace with new ones. Not new limiting beliefs, but new expansive, unlimited beliefs.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good point that you make, because when we do, so when you transitioned and freed yourself from this space that you mm-hmm. didn't want to be in anymore, then we still find, because we do have limiting beliefs. We have these beliefs that we hold to be true. Mm-hmm. And it's that awareness, like you still, it's kind of like that whole hamster wheel. Mm-hmm. And you're going and you're going and you're going. And you're like, God, I just made this huge transition. Why do I still feel like crap? Like,
exactly.
why? I don't understand. I just stood up for myself. I just did all this. It's like, wait a minute.
Yes.
Like you said, I didn't unearth like the core of what's going on.
Exactly. Well, it's so funny, Alice, because I saw a little video clip of this little girl. I don't know if you've seen it. It's all over the place. She looks like she can't be more than 5. And she's roller skating, but like doing a little roller skating race. And she starts off and she falls flat out. And you're like, oh, and you hear her father saying, get up, go. That little girl jumps up and skates like nobody's business. The other girls are much bigger, fall in a pile of the side of her this way and that. And she goes on to win. And just watching that, I know so many people can relate to that whole like little story. But that's how I felt when I made the leap to leave a marriage and jump out into this world on my own. I felt like I jumped out like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I am woman. Hear me roar. And I went plop.
Plan. Okay, hold on. Plan. Yeah.
Exactly. Wait a minute. I'll be with you in a second. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the continuing to get back up, continuing to persevere. And again, these aren't like brand new ideas, but they are around and people talk about them so much because they're so true. Like getting up, moving forward, and again, like thinking outside of the box and, you know, trusting yourself and all of those good things. And, you know, we were talking about limiting beliefs too. I think sometimes there's also not only the limiting beliefs that are running in our mind, but the messages we're getting from culture and perhaps family and, you know, just all the messaging we get. And when I first left the marriage and was trying to get on my feet financially, I remember my ex-husband said to me, it's going to take you 5 years to get on your feet.
Oh.
And do you know, it took me 6. And I remember at the time saying, oh, be quiet. You know, like I was really upset and I was like defending myself. And of course it's not. But somewhere I absorbed that. And I think I really, on some unconscious level, bought into it. Because it ended up taking me quite a while to get back on my feet financially. And, you know, if I knew then what I know now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's for anything. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a really important point that you're making about community. Mm-hmm. And again, these are things that we hear about all the time, but when you are in a space where people get you, when you're with your tribe, when you're with, because people don't understand unless they're in the situation. You can't talk about divorce to somebody who's never been divorced. They can be like, uh-huh, and offer you all of these solutions from their point of view when you're like, who are you to talk to me? you have absolutely no clue what exactly you're saying. Uh-huh. You're not an expert in this. And when you're in a space where people can be together and be honest and be authentic, mm-hmm. you're creating space for growth and releasing those limiting beliefs.
Absolutely. I don't think you can say that enough, right? I mean, community is what it's all about. Having that community that supports and holds you and encourages you to, you know, who loves you in your entirety, but also encourages you to expand and be more of you and all of that. I mean, it's really the difference of night and day. And for me, unfortunately, and another reason why I'm so passionate about working with this group of women, when I came out and fell flat on my face, I ended up being in a real place of fear. And so that really cut down on my creativity and it cut down on my ability to think clearly and definitely my ability to think outside of the box. And I ended up surrounding myself with a few people, not many. I had many wonderful people that supported me, but I ended up pulling a couple people into my world that, were not good for my soul. And I think, again, it was like I was coming from this place of fear And when you're in this fearful place, it is hard to be creative and clear. And so being courageous and moving away from a place of fear is, I think, vital.
And I think as you're saying this, I'm thinking when you're in that space, as you define creativity for yourself, you don't see color. Mm-mm. You don't see light. Everything seems like that. It's just dull.
Yes.
It's not vibrant.
Oh, no. And, you know, for me, I rented a home the first year I was separated and divorced, and the bedroom, the master bedroom, was painted a dark brown.
Oh.
And I did, I mean, there was just so much going on for me. I was also pregnant with my fourth child, so there was a lot happening for me. So I didn't make it a priority to repaint it, but I can remember so many mornings waking up and just being like, this is horrifying. Like, just the color of this room is enough to send anyone over the edge. Oh, right? But it's, yeah. it's, you know, and that's something simple. Like if I had it in me at that moment, how much difference it would have made to paint my room a bright yellow or a pale pink or, you know, something that would lift me versus bury me, which is what that felt like at the time.
And I think what you just said kind of goes back to what I called this. Let's explore the little treasures that make a big impact. Mm-hmm. And I think stating something like that, like painting the walls a color that make you feel good, that make you feel brighter. These are little things that you do that, because the wall is something that you're going to look at all the time.
Absolutely. Yes. It is a small thing, but it is a big thing. You know, it doesn't take a ton of effort. And I think we really dismiss those little things, but it's cumulative and it's collective. And if you are doing little things like that for yourself, they're like little steps, you know, little hands out to say, okay, come on, you got it. You got it. Keep moving in this direction. Right.
Yeah. It's funny because when we first moved into our house, so it was our first house that we'd owned. We lived in apartments and everything. Mm-hmm. And both my husband and I are both visual artists. So we just had like color everywhere. one of the rooms was purple, one with an accent, like with another one it was yellow, another one like every room was kind of different. Uh-huh. And it's just, I don't know. It's interesting because we lived with it for a while and then it almost got a little too chaotic.
Right.
Because it was kind of like, okay, here we are. We're expressing ourselves. That felt really good for that time. But there has to be some kind of unification within this townhouse space. So we kind of altered it to kind of, in the main areas, to shades of gray. And then popped color into everything that we have. So I guess I only bring it up because sometimes there's that transition where you have that freedom and that expression. It's like, I'm going to do whatever I want because I can. And then you do and you're happy with it. But then the change is like, you know what? Okay, we got to change this energy. But the change is good.
Yes, yes, I agree. I agree 100%. And it's interesting that you're talking about pops of color because I moved into a new home about a year and a half ago. And I had this color scheme in my mind. I have it on my vision board. And I just love it. And I just, you know, I have a lot of neutral shades on my wall, but I have shades of salmon and pinks and blues, these really warm blues. And it just makes me so happy. And it's very feminine, which, you know, my, for years, of course, I was in a marriage for over 14 years. My husband was a hunter, which was something he didn't start till after we got married, by the way. But it was a lot of, you know, like deer heads and brown. And, you know, again, I love brown as much as the next gal, but it's like, you know, I needed a little more. I like, you know, I needed more color and light. I needed it. Right.
Color and light. Okay. Yeah. So moving into the second question, which is, so how do you incorporate more creativity into your own life?
I think it's a practice. For me, it's been a practice because, you know, I generally gravitate toward, as I said, color. Like color is a very important to me, whether it be in my physical environment. I've really shifted in my clothing as well, because for a long time I was one of those vanilla people. Like, I needed blacks and tans, like that was sophisticated and important. And I think I was really trying to establish that I was sophisticated and important. But the color was something I always was pulled to, and then I would kind of fight it in myself. No, that's too much. Calm down. But now I make an effort to bring it into my life in the ways we were just talking about, with like my physical environment. Oops, sorry, I dropped my earbud. Okay. And, you know, with my clothing, with my music, I really like to diversify the music I'm listening to, whether it be the books and movies and indoor and outdoor, like making sure I'm getting, creating space outdoors that I can be in, whether it means I travel someplace or not. I just have it in my own yard, in my own garden. So I feel like that piece of it is kind of, it's a practice, really, like a deliberate decision to include those things in my life. And then always, whatever I'm doing, whether it's a work challenge or whether it's a personal family challenge, I feel like that's really where creativity gets to come in. Because I feel like I've gotten to a place in my life, and I really encourage the women in my circle and my family and in my work to think outside the box, especially when you feel like you've come up against a wall. So I'm thinking of it in both of these ways, like kind of in the, when I think of creativity, the first thing that comes to my mind often is, like art, you know, like physical, visual art or music, but then also in my thinking, mm-hmm. being creative in my thinking. So if I have a problem, how can I solve it outside of the norm? If the norm is not going to provide my solution.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so much that you said in here, which was amazing, which I'll go back to. But yeah, I mean, that's the whole point of why I created my company and why I created this space, is to have these conversations to expand the societal definition of what creativity is viewed as. Because a lot of times when you hear that word, I find people are like, oh, creative. Right. There's some kind of a reaction to that, because it's referred to, it's thought of as like, you know, drawing and painting, mm-hmm. That kind of thing. But when you mention things like problem solving, mm-hmm. and bring that into the picture, then other people, their eyes get bigger, because they're like, oh, I never thought of it that way.
Absolutely.
I've spoken to people within business. I've spoken to scientists. I had one person who was a biologist on here, and he's like, Hollis, I have no idea why you invited me into this space. He's like, because I just do not consider myself to be a creative person. Oh, and I was like, why do you do what you do? Like, why are you a scientist? And he said, I think it's sexy when you look through the microscope and you see the colors and the shapes and the way they come together. And here comes color again. And not that it has to necessarily be that, but he also mentioned things within, you know, he's also a teacher. So with that, it's the problem solving and creating curriculum and how you interact with people, as you're saying, is a creative, how you use your voice, how you express yourself. So, but once he said the whole thing about the microscope, and I said, well, that's why I have you in this space. And he totally loosened up.
Yes.
After that. Then he was like, oh. And by the end of the conversation, he said, thank you for this. I'm kind of seeing things in a different light. I've had so many people say that.
Oh, I love that. That's so beautiful. Well, and I think of science, it's interesting, because I know when you think of science, you think of facts. But I also think of the magic of science. Like, I don't know how science can't be. Could not be creativity about creativity. I mean, these are people that are really thinking outside of the box. They're, you know, they're laying the foundation of new ideas and new concepts and all that good stuff.
Oh my God. Yes, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And I recently had someone on the show, and we talked about thinking outside the box, and she's like, you know what? I say hover over the box. Create your new damn box. She's like, make it a circle. Make it whatever shape you want it to be. Like, it doesn't have to be a box. And I was like, I love that.
Exactly. I like that too. That's a good one.
I know.
That's really thinking outside the box.
It is. It is. But I want to go back to what you said about clothing style, because mm-hmm. I think that is really, really important, because I guess I'm relating to that also. I find myself definitely in that space. And I like how you pointed out where you said it's kind of, you were in this bland space, but then you kind of, you had the awareness. You're like, that's not me. It's not representative of me. But then you kind of had that internal battle where, oh no, that's too much. If I add too much in here, and yeah, I can totally relate. I don't know if you want to say any more on that.
Yeah, I mean, I really do feel like it's been part of my evolution, because it was many years and I'm not trying to villainize my ex. He's a wonderful human being. There's many beautiful things about him, but he is very vanilla, if you will. And I knew, I got in this relationship with him, and so what he thought mattered. And I remember he did not feel comfortable with drawing a lot of attention to himself, so he didn't want me to draw a lot of attention to myself. Or at least that's how I internalized what I thought he was thinking and feeling. And I really wanted to, I wanted him to be okay with what I was wearing. I wanted him to like what I was wearing. And I think that as women, we in general, and I'm generalizing, we are really conditioned to meet other people's needs first. Mm-hmm. And the sad thing is, I don't really know that that was ever really what he thought or felt. You know, those were all my interpretations of what I thought he was thinking, right?
Yeah.
And I think when we first got together, I had a lot more color in my life. And so you might also then be able to go like, oh, maybe that had a little something to do with things not working out. Like, if you start to dim your light, it really changes everything, your relationships with your relationship with yourself as well as with others. So I do think it's reflective of how much self-love you really have, how much self-acceptance you have, when you're able to bravely, you know, garnish a hot pink scarf. I don't know, you know.
Yeah. And when you say, it's funny, because so our daughter's 18, and mm-hmm. we've had a lot of conversations about clothing. Mm-hmm. And I know we're spending time here, but I just feel this kind of richness in the conversation, because mm-hmm. then we get into this whole thing, because, you know, she'll wear crop tops and a lot of her friends are wearing these short shorts and and all this kind of stuff. And she's like, Mom, are you body shaming? I'm like, babe, I'm not body shaming, sweetie. I'm just trying to bring an awareness to you, just on, I'm not trying to say the perception, but mm-hmm. I guess it's the mother thing, where it's just boys are thinking with their parts. And when they're thinking with their parts and they see somebody that has like a nice curvy body and a big chest, then that's what they're seeing. And we get into a lot of conversations about that, but I have to say that she is really my mirror because I get lost on the whole clothing thing. Mm-hmm. And I finally said to her the other day, and I'm saying it out loud here, I'm like, you know what? I don't think that my clothing, how I represent myself, matches my brand. Mm-hmm. It's not matching. And she's like, yes.
That's great. She's like, you got it, Mom. Right on the notes.
So, she's my personal shopper with me. She's like, you have to get out of your comfort zone mm-hmm. and put a scarf in your hair that you don't usually put a scarf in your hair. Like, do those things and get uncomfortable.
Absolutely. My daughter's like that all the time. She's always suggesting, my daughter's 19, would you like me to help you find an outfit? And I'm like, no, thank you. Anyway. And she's like, come on, Mom, let me help you with this. It's so funny you mentioned the clothing and the shortness, though. I have, my niece was visiting the other day, and she had the shortest shorts ever. And I was like, hey, sweet cheeks. And she got so mad at me. I was like, I'm sorry, I couldn't help but notice.
It's true, right?
Yeah. So it is, you know, a delicate balance. I'm like, if you're comfortable with it, that's, you know, and your parents are comfortable with it, that's a whole other ball of wax. But, you know, obviously you're not that comfortable with it if calling you sweet cheeks sent you over the edge. So, you know, but I hear you. It's a delicate balance there. And again, it goes back to the, you know, I do think it goes back to where you feel most comfortable, mm-hmm. and working your way to pushing yourself out of the comfort zone, right? It's easier to do that when you feel you have that self-acceptance and some self-knowing, you know?
Yeah.
Some. Obviously, the venturing out, it builds all of that. But, you know, I think it's important to look at it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a process. It's like a package. And mm-hmm. want to hear more about your you mentioned traveling mm-hmm. and creating that space. So are you do you really like to travel?
I do. I have 4 kids. And of course, as I've already talked about, I've been kind of in a place of transition for a while, but I did quite a bit of traveling when I was younger. And even if it's just traveling around the US, you know, I love to drive. So I will fly. My work as a consultant with teachers took me all over the country prior to COVID, and I got to hit Alaska, which was amazing. And I had never been there before. And I was in, I did a lot of work in Arizona, and I was able to work on some Native American reservations out there. So the landscape is incredible. And then to be in a community that I was not very familiar with at the time. So really, that's the piece of travel that I really love. I mean, and there's certain, you know, the people and the community, and then all that comes with that culture and community. So in the US, those are some trips that I took recently. And then I actually made my way to Italy right before my youngest son was born. And that was the place I'd been wanting to go. And one of my favorite places there was Portofino because of the color. It was like, I could just sit in a boat and stare at this place just forever.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. Something about, I mean, there's the appreciation of taking yourself out of your regular environment. And then I find when you come back into your environment, there could be a few different perceptions. You either see more, you see more clearly. Or I'm thinking of my son when he came back from Costa Rica and then he came here to Jersey and he's like, why? Why am I here? I'm like, I know, babe. I know it's not Costa Rica because he saw such richness and nature and color like he had never experienced before.
Oh, I know, right? Yes, my daughter just had a similar experience with Puerto Rico. And yeah, I agree with you. I've definitely had both experiences myself where I've gone away and I've come home and I'm like, oh, I love this space. Like, I see my space in a different light. And then I share, you know, your son's experience where I've come back and I'm like, time for change. Something needs to change.
Exactly. Exactly. So before we go to the next question, I want to hear more about, because obviously writing is one of these things that you do as well.
Yes.
So yes. Let's hear about what you're doing in there.
So writing is something, honestly, I've been referring lately to writing as my friend. I mean, being a writer has really allowed me to have this inner dialogue in a different way than just running around in my head. And ever since I was, you know, ever since I learned to read and write, I have been writing my own little stories and my own little books. And obviously we use writing in our work. And now that I'm, you know, now that I'm doing this online business, tons of writing, you're posting content all the time. But I really feel like, you know, there's two pieces of it. There's the practice of writing, which when I'm working on something specific, I really have to create that schedule. Because when I was a younger writer, I really believed that, you know, the big ideas and the beautiful stories were just going to come to me in a moment. And I was just going to sit down and it would pour onto the page. And really, it's a practice like anything else. You know, I have to create a schedule, create an environment where I can sit and write and give myself boundaries and parameters. And then the beauty comes, you know, it's part of the process, part of the practice. So it is a bit of work as well. So I feel like I use writing in two different ways. So I use writing to express myself as kind of an art form. And then I also use it, as I was saying before, kind of like my friend. You know, I spent a couple of weeks in Brazil years ago, and I spoke no Portuguese. I could say like, obrigado. That was like it. And as you can tell, I'm a talker, and I thought I was going to go mad. I was like, someone needs to hear from me. And so, like, you know, I would just write in my journal several times a day. I mean, I wrote more than I've ever written, I think, in a short period of time. So I just find it to be very cathartic. I find it to be very helpful in knowing myself better, unearthing these limiting beliefs, kind of recreating or rewriting stories, my story, you know, because sometimes you get into the thick of it, especially when, you know, if you're a mom and you have kids and you're kind of focused on them, you can tend to lose sight. You know, you just kind of get, as you said, like onto the hamster wheel. And coming back to a piece of paper and writing out, I'm still a writer. I still write with pen and paper. A lot of people prefer working on a laptop. I can do both. But there's something about the physical activity of writing that is also very cathartic and useful.
I agree. They've also done, I mean, there's science related to that.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. It's not unlike, you know, when I was doing all this driving around the country, I came up with my best ideas driving. And I think that's a really big piece of it. Like the actual act of writing is something that takes one part of your brain, and then the big ideas are released, you know, when you've kind of engaged that other piece of your brain. And it's much like when you're in the shower or when you're driving, you're kind of on autopilot, and then the creative mind kind of opens up.
Exactly. I've had in the car where I've done, basically press record and just go on a rampage.
Yes.
And just talk. And that's where, with the pauses and everything, but that's where you get the ideas really start flowing, because you're just, it's just like, blah.
Yes.
coming out. And yeah, which can then be translated onto paper later.
Right. And there are some, I did learn a couple years ago, because I wasn't really using this, but I did a workshop with a well-published author, and she really subscribed to, there's these different kind of dictation apps you can download now, and you kind of have to train them. I'm using that word loosely, but you have to train them to know your voice. But then you can speak into it and it will transcribe it, which is awesome, you know, because I was kind of doing it old school, like talking to my audio, and then I would try to transcribe it later, and that's a nightmare.
Right. Yeah.
Like, ah, I already said it once.
That's where technology is like, oh, yes, thank you.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think with the writing, I like what you said about creating a schedule, creating an environment, and setting boundaries. Mm-hmm. That is so important. And because it's not always, you get these romantic ideas of, oh, you're a writer. And yeah, these downloads of ideas come to you, but you really do have to set up your space.
Yes, absolutely. Setting up your space. And one thing that's been super useful to me, and I hate to admit it, but it's taken me years to kind of figure it out, is the time. Like there's a certain time of day that's really good for me to write, and that's early morning. And when I'm really working on something specific, I know that that's got to be part of the environment, is that I have to carve out that time every day, the same time. And so, you know, for me, it's early morning. I know some people, I met one writer who said she woke every day at 3 a.m. And so she just started writing. She'd wake, she'd write for, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour, and then go back to sleep.
Oh, wow.
I was like, that's all right. That's a way to make use of that. And some people are really good at writing wherever they are, you know, if they're traveling or commuting. I think just really, again, another thing that's important to do is figure out what works for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and then creating that boundary around that time, which with a family is sometimes tricky, you know, but I think it's really important to say, okay, this is my time. Do not disturb. And, you know, once the family gets used to that, then they actually start to honor it if you hold it.
Good point. Yeah. Is the consistency of that, whatever you decide as you know, your style, or if it's going to be the same time every day, or if it's just when you set the time yourself and say to the family, this is when I need my time. Mm-hmm. It's the consistency, I think, in the tone of your voice and, or that time for them to really honor it. Because sometimes it's like, oh, you know, I need this time. I'm going to be working for 45 minutes. And it can sound a little like mamby pamby.
Yes.
The kids are like, she doesn't really mean that.
Absolutely. And I've even had that, you know, I've really been practicing that also around my work now, because I'm online. So I'm doing lives and podcasts and, you know, I have put a lot of things in writing. There's lots of big signs on my door, my office door. And mm-hmm. my children have begun to really understand this is serious business. Back off, right? Mm-hmm. You know, don't come to me and ask me where your shoes are while I'm on a live. I am work. I'm not going to answer. I'm going to ignore you.
Actually, you mentioned that one of my mentors was talking, I think a while ago. It was like, what was one of the most dramatic things that happened while you're on a live? And for her, it was her kid like sliced his hand. And had to go to the hospital, but her husband took him and she kept going on the live.
She's like, the show must go on. Like, it's okay. Tricky, right? Yeah. I was doing a podcast. Actually, this morning I did another podcast and everything was going smoothly and the kids were being really cooperative. And then all of a sudden I heard a sound that was very unfamiliar. I think my eyes got really wide. It was also through video. And I was like, okay, I think everything's fine. I'm sure I'll hear it again if it's a real problem.
Hopefully everybody's breathing.
That's right. I hear scuttling around. I think we're okay.
Oh my gosh. So I want to acknowledge our listener who is here live. And they said that when we were talking about dictation, White Smoke and Grammarly does sentence structure too.
Yes. Yes. That sounds familiar to me. I wish I could remember. There was another one. I want to say it has something dragon in the name of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does that ring a bell to you?
Yeah. I don't know if it's Dragon Speaks or Dragon. I forget what it's called now. For my son, when he had his IEP, that was one of the things we wrote in, that he'd be able to talk and it would dictate.
Oh, gotcha. Yes.
Which he never did after all the fighting that we got for him for that. But he was like, I'm not speaking into anything at the time. That's embarrassing.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. Speaking of phone, even is embarrassing for them. I'm like, what happened?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah. So we are going to move on to the third question, which kind of is everything that we talked about. We kind of put a little bow on it by asking, so why is creativity important?
Creativity is important because, like, what's the point without it? I mean, that's what comes to my mind immediately when I think of that question. It's what makes our life worth living, in my opinion. It really is what makes life rich and full and meaningful. To just be really concise, I think creativity is God's gift. And without getting too, you know, spiritual and everybody, I do feel like it's the gift that we need to honor.
I really do.
Well,
it's going back to your definition of color, light, and individuality.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It really, I feel like the lack of creativity, is sad. It's just sadness to me. I feel like you have to have that in your life.
Yeah. Perfect way to bring that to a close.
Yeah.
So, Kelly, can you tell people how they can find you, please?
Absolutely. So I'm easiest to find right now online. You can find me by my name, Kelly Schwartz Kevel. I also have this Facebook group I've been talking about, Single Moms Rockin' Parenthood. So that's easier to remember. And you certainly can find me there. And then I'm also on Instagram, and my IG handle again is just my name, Kelly Schwartzkevel. And certainly through Facebook, you can DM me if you have questions or you want more information about anything that's going on for me. And yeah, I'm just so happy to be here with you, Hollis. This has been such a beautiful conversation, and I so appreciate the work you're doing. This is a great forum.
Oh, thank you, truly. And I just so appreciate you taking the hour
absolutely
to talk and explore and have the conversation. So, so appreciative. So before you go, can you just give people like a final word of advice, some words of wisdom?
I would say be courageous. And I work a codependency recovery program, and in it they say, courage is fear that said its prayers. So I would just encourage you to be courageous.
So on that note, this space is all about inspiring, sharing stories, and connecting. So please like, follow, and share so we can spread the word and get these stories out there, because we need to lift each other up and be there for each other as community. So I appreciate you, listeners, and I wish you a good morning, a good afternoon, and a good evening wherever you are in this world. Bye, everybody.
Bye.